When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Michael Anthony here. Van Halen, Chickenfoot, Sammy in the Circle. But anyway, you're listening to the only podcast that is dedicated to breaking down the entire Van Halen catalog one track at a time. And the podcast will rock. Ow!
Hello, babe!
What is up, all you rockers, rockettes, and everything in between? Everyone is included here. You have joined us for a new edition of And the Podcast Will Rock. Welcome back to the show, all of you fan favorites and loyal listeners. We appreciate all of you. And if it's your first time joining us, welcome. Let me break down what we are doing here. We are the show that dives into the catalog and discography of one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time, Van Halen, the mighty Van Halen, and we do it one track at a time. We spin a wheel, we hit the track, and we listen to it, and we talk about it. That's basically what we do here, because that's just the fun way to do it. And I am your co-host, Mark Kammeyer. With me, as always, Corey Morissette. Corey, how you feeling this week, man?
Very cold. Winter finally found us here in Canada. It was really nice. Like, we're talking, like, you know, zero to like plus five or six. Like, we're walking around in shorts, shirt sleeves. I'm sporting my Plentywood Montana shirt design that you can find only at the End of Podcast Will Rock merch store. You can get the link on our website, podcastwillrock.com. But winter found us this week. Yesterday was minus 20, minus 30 something with the wind chill, and we got some snow. So we're buried in snow again, minus 33 again today with the wind chill. So miserable day, but I feel like I can't complain too hard because we're usually getting these temperatures in November, not January. So I guess I could take the cold for a little bit. Hopefully it all lets up by, like, you know, June, I'm hoping.
Well, that's the price you pay for living north of the wall. And when the cold winds rise, the dead rise with it. So be no on kidding. Alert up no there, Corey. Kidding.
You and, don't know how accurate you are, Mark.
Oh yeah, that's anytime people from Canada talk about it, it was like, well, you guys are north of the wall, so you bunch of wildlings up there, you free folk, steer clear of the mammoths, the giants, and the blue-eyed monsters.
That's right.
And as long as you can do that, you're good to go. Never mind the fact that in the southern U.S., in the Atlantic, there are cocaine-ridden sharks that are just swimming all about, high on cocaine. This is real. This is a digression from the show, but I don't care. I'm mentioning it because I saw a video and it terrified me. Cartel dumping cocaine, just massive amounts of cocaine in the ocean, and sharks have been getting into it. They have footage of the sharks getting into these discarded piles of cocaine, and they are just wreaking havoc in the water. We had Cocaine Bear. That was a fun time, right? Y'all had a good time with Cocaine Bear, based on a true story, actually, in my home state that took place. It was a real story. Now, how do you feel about cocaine sharks? On top of that, we are being riddled with a series of tornadoes more this past year than I think I've ever seen in my life. So, Sharknado, like Shark Coke-nado? Like, I'm thinking a new franchise is on the way, but I'm just saying to all of you divers and swimmers of the Atlantic, be warned, be cautious, and do not try to outswim a cocaine shark. You will fail.
There is a movie, and Cocaine Shark, too. Like, it sounds like an Asylum movie, and I think they did make a cheap, well, not Asylum, but somebody made a cheap ripoff movie called Cocaine Shark. And now that's based on a true story. Well, I got to tell you, I'm pretty sure the tornadoes in your area are going to simmer down now that we've done Humans Being. Now that we've got that song off the wheel, probably less tornadoes.
One can only hope, but we will cross that bridge when we come to it. All I'm hoping for, speaking of cold winds rising, look, we're feeling those cold winds that have been blowing your way, and we're going to get a little taste of it. But enough about the weather. Let's talk about some Van Halen. What's going on in Van Halen news?
Sure. Let's check with the Van Halen news desk. We got a couple of new articles. There's an interview here with Tesla guitarist Frank Hannon. Great guitar player. I saw Tesla open for Def Leppard a few years ago, and they were fantastic. And he calls Eddie Van Halen rock guitar's Mozart, not only because of his skill with the guitar, but because of his charisma too and his personality, like always smiling. Mozart was, I guess, quite charismatic, so pretty hard to argue with Mr. Hannon on that one. Eddie Van Halen is forever rock guitar's Mozart. Absolutely, I think everybody on this call and in our chat would agree.
Somewhere out there, there is a screaming Yngwie Malmsteen just screaming his head off. But yes, I would agree with that assessment.
Then we have Ray Luzier performs classic Van Halen on Alex's Kit. That's part of Modern Drummer's series of videos dedicated to Alex Van Halen, who's their 2023 Hall of Fame inductee. Ray Luzier is currently on the road with Korn, gets behind Alex's 2012 kit and performs some Van Halen classics. So that's pretty cool. You'll want to check that one out.
I have a sidebar to that real quick, if you'll allow me.
Of course.
Currently, Ray is not at this moment on tour, and I'll tell you how I know that. Very recently, as in this past Sunday, a few of my friends in Nashville, they have this band called Carrot with a K and two R's. One's backwards. It's a Korn tribute band. They're called Carrot, and they're fantastic, good dudes, and just wonderful musicians. Well, they just so happened to play a show on Sunday, and while at the show, they had a surprise announcement, and Ray Luzier, drummer of Korn, got up on stage and played a couple of songs with them.
Oh, nice.
It was totally spur of the moment. He just happened to be in town, and he just came up, and I guess I don't even know how the conversation went. I like to think of it, because I've met Ray like once or twice, and I like to think he just went up to the venue and was just like, hey, is it cool if I, like, sit in? Can I do that? I don't want to impose or anything. And when Ray Luzier asked if he can just sit in and play a song,
sit
I
down.
Think he just said one song. Yeah, it's like, dude's like, dude, come in and sit down. Play the whole damn set if you want to. You know the songs. So, but instead he did get to play one song, but then they asked him to please play the following one after that. So he did. And I thought that was really cool. It wasn't a huge thing. Nobody made like a humongous deal about it. It was just, you know, a very famous rock star just happened to be there, and it was just very cool. And he's like, hey, is it cool if I join you guys on stage? And there you go. So very cool moment. Very cool, dude. If you get the chance to go see Ray Luzier, whether he's playing in Korn or Jonathan Davis's solo band, or if he's just out doing a drum thing whatsoever, do yourself a favor, go watch it, because that guy is phenomenal. So that's my little sidebar.
Scott Monroe says, cool story, cool with a K. He got the memo. Well done. Scott's on fire every
week
now.
Scott. Well done, Scott.
he's aiming for my job, I tell you. But nobody reads the news like me, though, damn it. Let's get back
to it.
That's true. Dave Lee Roth drummer Francis Valentino is on the Darren Paltrowitz show. The Paltrow cast, he's been getting all the great guests lately. Of course, he just wrote his book on David Lee Roth, and he was talking to Francis Valentino about the challenging changes of Unchained. He asked him, what's the most difficult Van Halen song to do live? And he listed Unchained. And there's a great little video actually taken from a David Lee Roth show, and they were opening for Kiss on one of the early legs of the End of the Road tour. The quality's not great. I won't play it for you here, but people can go check that out on the Van Halen news desk. But man, Darren Paltrowitz getting all the great guests lately. Now, his book is doing really, really well. So,
yeah,
congratulations,
dude. Good for you,
Darren. Fantastic. Then we have a great little article here from our good friend, the legendary Eric Senich, behind the scenes with David Lee Roth and Eddie Van Halen. And again, we're going back to the Paltrowitz cast, the Paltrow cast. He did an interview with Frank Meyer, who's an author, musician, and documentarian, to talk about a lot of things David Lee Roth. And then Eric Senich did his own interview with Frank Meyer. Here are some of the bullet points from that interview. They talk about hanging out with the Zappas, playing the guitar Eddie gifted to Dweezil, which is a very famous guitar, meeting Steve Vai, hearing Ross Eat 'Em and Smile songs before anyone else, meeting Eddie Van Halen, interviewing, hanging out, and getting drunk with David Lee Roth at his mansion, Dave's gigantic joint. Now, I don't know if that's his member or if that's an actual joint.
I'm going to assume it's a joint.
When it comes to Eric Senich, I don't know. You know, that guy's packing.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe.
the animated show featuring Dave that almost happened. The David Lee Roth philosophy book that almost happened. Hearing the secret songs Dave recorded with the Van Halen in 2000. That's a big one. Attending Eddie Van Halen's house party in 06. Dave calls out Frank at the 07 Van Halen press conference. Attending Van Halen's 07 tour rehearsal at the LA Forum. And attending the 2015 Eat 'Em and Smile Band reunion concert that was canceled at the last minute by the fire marshal. So they cover a lot of ground in that interview. You guys, you got to check that one out. Just endlessly entertaining stories from Frank Meyer on that one.
Sounds like it. Yeah, could you go to that picture real quick? Can we take a look at this picture of Eddie Van Halen and David Lee Roth? Do you remember the oh my god. I'm going to miss it. There was an old wrestling tag team featuring Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, the Rockers.
The Rockers. And tell me that doesn't give you Rockers vibes.
Little bit. You got Marty Jannetty on the right and
Yeah,
Shawn Michaels. And Shawn Michaels and David Lee Roth at this time in Shawn Michaels' career would have a lot in common, actually.
Yes, they would. The moment you pulled up that picture, I instantly thought about the Rockers. It's like, was that planned? Was that on purpose? But anywho, so for y'all, all you old school wrestling fans, that's just for you.
That one's for you, yep.
Yeah.
Scott Monroe in the chat, interviewing, hanging out, and getting drunk with David Lee Roth at his mansion sounds like a great movie title. I agree.
Someone should adapt that into a screenplay.
Yes.
Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, twist my rubber arm, why don't you?
Yeah, I was like, all right. Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's all we have for news on the Van Halen news desk. Remember, www.vhnd.com for all your Van Halen merch and Van Halen news.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much. All right, well then we go to the poll, man, the rockin' poll from last week from our last show, and see what the people were saying. Now, did you have any predictions ahead of time on whether or how you thought the voting was going to go for this song in particular?
Yeah, I was hoping for close to 80%. I figured there's no way in hell we're going to get anything where it deserves to be, but I was hoping like 78, 79, pushing 80. Was kind of my guess, and I think that was kind of the mood in the chat too. They were saying 75, kind of around that area.
Well, it might surprise you. The track in question we're talking about is Good Enough. If you guys didn't catch it, we covered Good Enough, and the opening track to not the album that I said originally or that we tweeted out, but the corrected one, and. We got an 82.3% What Dreams Are Made Of versus a 17.7. Honestly, I can't even really complain too hard as much as I really want to, because I personally feel like the song should be voted much higher. But just the fact that it broke 80%, 82, in fact, kind of makes me a little bit happy, and just in the sense that, okay, cool. I think the majority of you guys actually listen to the song or you know the song, so you had good things to say about it. And then the other 17%, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that probably have their opinions on what they think about it. We already talked about lyrically, is Good Enough, the Sammy Hagar typical, or is it, a little bit worse? But 82% surprised me, and it's a good surprise. It's a happy surprise. So I'm trying not to dwell on the negative here.
Well, I tell you what, Mark.
Yeah, yeah.
The 82.3%, where that ranks all time on our show, is actually ranked number 53. So a little better than half. It's in the top half. It's nestled right in between Right Now, which is right above it at 82.4%, and right above Fools at 82.1%. So for a Sammy track, you can see on the screen here, you know, there's 3, 4, 5 ahead of it, including Best of Both Worlds at the 35 spot. But, you know, I tell you, Good Enough, most people thought, well, I guess it's good enough. We thought it was a little bit better than Good Enough. But the audience in general ranked it just good enough and better than songs like Fools, Seven Seal, Blood and Fire, She's the Woman, Dirty Movies, Could This Be Magic, Judgment Day, Out of Love Again. So there's a couple of heavy hitters that Good Enough is actually beating.
Let me ask you this, though, before I get into what people are saying about it. Do you think, based on what we have left, especially with the Hagar era, there's not a lot, but we have a good bit left. Is there any chance any of those tracks of the Hagar era breaks 90%?
Zero.
Zero.
I mean,
unfortunately, I think you're right. There may be one that could do it, but I don't think it's gonna.
The only one I think that might have a shot is Summer Nights, but I don't see that doing as well.
We have gotten that one manifested quite a bit. Yeah. So it could be that one is not the track I was thinking of, but you're probably right. You're probably right.
It's, which one were you
if
thinking?
Anyone's got it. I was thinking When It's Love.
Okay, but well, they don't like ballads.
Just because that's true. They don't. And but man, that song was just a massive song. And I just don't understand. We'll get into it when we spin it. But yeah, of the songs that I think could do it, will they do it? Probably not at this point. But and that makes me a little sad. But whatever, good enough. 82.3%. I guess that's good enough. Let's see what the people are saying about this. Sean McGinnity, our good buddy Sean from the Sean Geek and Fast Frit podcast, he says, here we go. Absolutely cringe at the lyrics of this one. You, sir, put that red rocker away. That is inappropriate. But I can't deny how strong the rest of the song is. What a way to launch an album. This is a great warm-up to an audience waiting to hear what the new Halen will be like. So he's very positive. He's not positive on the lyrics, and that's to be expected. Yeah, it's fine because it is what it is. But I like that Sean still acknowledged that, you know, though the lyrics are a cringe fest, it's still such a banger. So thank you, Sean. We'll move on to our buddy Greg Zito. Greg says, Ed is incredible. Mike and Al are in the pocket, and Sam is singing his butt off. The lyrics are tough and haven't aged well. That being said, this track is hashtag what dreams are made of. Turn it up to 11. And he gave you a nice little Spinal Tap gif while he was at it, just because that
these
was
go to 11.
Conversation.
I have clips from that movie now.
These go to 11.
There you go.
Of course you do. And rightfully you should. All right. See, okay. Scott Everett says, after hearing Why Can't This Be Love, I wasn't sure what was going to happen when I pushed play on 5150. What I got was a rocker, great beat and overall tone, and I love how they are having fun with it. That's a vote yes, I believe, from his from there we go. And David Lee Smith says, Hagar comparing a woman to a piece of meat and oversinging this makes me cringe every time. Rapist much? Well, I think that's going a little far, Davey, but you do you. Granted, the music is what makes the dreams, what makes this what dreams are made of, so there's that. So, Dave, you know, everybody's, I think we're all on board that the lyrics don't age well. I don't nearly have as strong of an opinion about it as the rest of you, apparently, but I do admit, do they hold up? No, not really. But does that diminish the quality of the song? For me, no, not at all. So there's the tweets. We're going to move on over to our Discord. And guys, we say this every week, but I'm going to say it again. If you want your tweet guaranteed read on the show, join the Patreon. Not only that, you'll get access to our Discord where you can basically just say and post as much as you want. And I'm going to read it. Because if you join the Patreon, that's one of the perks. I get to read your nonsensical awesomeness. it's not nonsensical. I'm just playing around. So let's see. Starting with, I believe, Ryan Powell, our good buddy Ryan. I think, or is that? No. I'm sorry. That was not yet, Ryan. Scott Monroe, on the other hand, says, good enough has more than enough going for it to be what dreams are made of. You guys said it. What a way to open the first album with Sammy. Sammy's, I'm looking at you, Van Halen 3, quirks an eyebrow. Sammy's howling and affectations are so on point for this high energy, playful opener. Sweet, silky Mikey is there to make it all that much better with his harmonies. And Alex is a tribal warrior in lockstep with Eddie's frenetic flourishes. It all builds to the extremely satisfying come on outro section with classic tapping that winds up to a concert ending. This is every bit as good as and swinging as David Lee Roth era party rock. It's also forever associated in my mind with the iconic Spaceballs diner scene that features the first minute of the song, which deliciously reflects the lighthearted late 80s sensibilities both the movie and the tune are going for. If you downvote this song, you are a thief of joy.
Yes.
Chew on that.
Well,
there
said.
You go. That's Scott Monroe saying it. That's not me. So
I'm saying
take
it too,
up
damn
that.
It. That's my hashtag, thief of joy, 100%. He's right. Thief of joy.
Absolutely right. Let's see. And this comes from Chad. Chad's a new Patreon.
That's
I believe.
Right. Yeah.
Chad says, good enough. Nope. Great enough. If my old ass memory is correct, the Easter Bunny brought me this tape. I was so excited as this album was a total Reese's Peanut Butter Cup moment for me.
Nice.
Two bands I really liked getting together. What could be better? Like chocolate and peanut butter. I got what you were saying there. And I tell you what. When I bit into that first bite of Good Enough, I knew I was going to be a fat kid forever. Sammy was loud and even more fun than he was on VOA. The tempo was fast. There was a palatable energy. This was not my older sister's Van Halen. I still love the song to this day and have not grown tired of it despite the shitty recording and the awful and dated electronic drum sound. The song ushered me into my Van Halen era. So what I'm getting from you, Chad, is that the Van Halen era or the Sammy era of Van Halen is your Van Halen. And you know what? I'm not mad about it. So good on you. And thank you very much. Let's see here. Our friend Chaz Mataz, old Chaz Charles, I'm sure he's got plenty to say. So what's he saying? He is saying, good enough to have been the lead single, and Jesus, if it had been, I'd have suited up with it a lot quicker. This song, it's everything that was Ed at the peak of his powers. All of them, including Sammy. This song makes me want to rage. It's exactly the formula I wish Van Hagar had stuck with later on. It's an all-time classic and for sure what dreams are made of. And if Brown is down, he needs to stop messing around and listen again. It's the best of Van Halen, regardless of frontman.
And he actually says before his rant, he said, if the little man from Saskatchewan, referring to Kevin Brown, downvotes this, he's just an arsehole. But I don't believe
oh,
he
Oh, God,
did.
Is that who Kevin is? He's yep. The little man from Saskatoon?
Yeah, the little man from Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan, yeah. My apologies to you, Kev. I represent all you short kings. Never let it never be forgotten. All right, our friend Jeff Brewer, he's got a lot to say about this one, so here we go. Good enough. March of 1986, my senior year in high school, already a major Van Halen fan, the license plate frame for my 83 Ford Ranger read Van Halen Equipment Truck.
That's cool.
Clever. I was at the record store on the day it was released, probably right when it opened, hoping to hear some new Van Halen that sounded more like Van Halen than the first single, Why Can't This Be Lame, he calls it. Disrespectful. Within the first 10 seconds of hearing this song in my equipment truck's Pioneer cassette stereo player, I was pretty happy. I too had a Pioneer cassette.
Everybody player. Did. Pioneer made the best cassette decks for cars. Like
they really did.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if they did or if we just got used to it. I don't know, but nevertheless,
Alpine had a pretty good deck too. But yeah, I think everybody around my part of the like I live in buttfuck nowhere. We all had Pioneers too. So
you didn't have a Blaupunkt or whatever they were.
No,
called?
No, that's a little too fancy for Saskatchewan.
Hey, it was too fancy for me, too. I didn't have one. Moving on, he said, continuing, he goes, I had a steady girlfriend at the time, so I had to mildly disapprove of the lyrics and prefer the more relationship-friendly Love Walks In. However, to borrow from renowned wordsmith Samuel Hagar, time has told that this song has stood the test of time better than the two love songs from this album, in my opinion. Ed pulled out his complete bag of tricks to constantly pepper us with a continuous barrage of great fills. Virtually every signature Eddie Van Halen technique is in there. Tapping flurries, pinch harmonic squeals, rapid fire open string natural harmonic runs, bended tap harmonics, and a cool and interesting melodic line leading into the chorus. Yes, the lyrics are juvenile, and I tend to give Sam a bad time about some of his lyrics over the years, but this is pretty tongue-in-cheek and harmless. Plus, back then it was pretty much required that rock bands in Van Halen's genre have at least one sexually suggestive, cheesy, metaphor-laden song on each album. That's a fact. This song is not my favorite from the album. That spot is held by the inimitable 5150, or even in the top three. Number two is Best of Both Worlds. Number three, Summer Nights. But it is definitely good enough to flop and upvote. So all that to say, Jeff Brewer really, really digs this song. He digs the album more. But What Dreams Are Made Of for him. There you have it. So again, guys, you want your tweets or your discords read on the show, guaranteed, join the Patreon. Guarantee we'll have a tier for you, or we'll make one.
And I got to tell you, I found a great quote from a great documentary I saw not too long ago about Sammy's lyrics.
What's wrong with being sexy? I mean, there's no
sexist.
Oh, sexist. Oh, yes. What's wrong with being sexy?
Yeah, I mean, but again, my pushback is, and Jeff alluded to this, because back then I think it was sort of a requirement for the rock bands of that day, especially the hair metal bands, to have at least one aggressively overtly sexual song.
Yeah.
You know, the times were different, kids. I'm not saying times were better, and I'm not giving it a pass. I'm just saying times were different. So, we can acknowledge that those lyrics do not hold up over time, but we can also acknowledge that the song itself, is it affected by the lyrics greatly? To me, no, but if it does to you, fair enough. Still, with all that being said, I can't believe it it got to an 82% What Dreams Are Made Of, honestly.
Now
it's even more surprising.
Six percentage points behind Pound Cake, which is the leading Sammy track. On our all-time list, but I tell you, who wasn't a fan of that manifesto, the Jeff Brewer manifesto, was Jeff Brewer, who said, man, that was too wordy. So he self-criticizing himself here in the chat.
Case in point, if you put it down there, once it goes into the channel, that's it, and I'm reading it, unless you edit it or you take it out. But if it's there during a recording showtime, I'm reading it, because that's what you pay for.
All right, well, what else is there left to do?
The one thing that is left to do before we spin that wheel is to manifest what we want to listen to. Woohoo, take a drink. All right, well, it is an auspicious occasion in the world of Van Halen, so I throw it to you, Corey. What do you think we should manifest for the night?
Well, I tell you what, we had a discussion earlier today. And by us, I mean like our patrons on the Discord server, because we have the manifestation channel where everybody can put their manifestations for the week. And they're all coming out the same. And I just threw it out there that, you know, we should all just, you know, combine our manifestation powers for 1 week. And every single person on the Patreon and on this call should manifest the exact same song. And that's what we're doing here tonight, because it is the 40th anniversary of the album 1984. We are all manifesting the last track we have yet to cover off of 1984, House of Pain.
House of Pain. Long awaited, long manifested, always eludes us, but the time has come. So, yes, we'll be taking no other suggestions, because this is the time. If there was ever a time to spin a track from 1984, it is now. So, put all of your manifestation powers into that wheel. You look at the wheel in its eye and you go, listen, you bitch, you're going to spin the song that we need because we need it. We need to do this. It's time. So
Voltron manifestation. Probably,
yeah, yeah, that probably pissed her off a little bit, but, you know,
we'll see.
I'll deal with the ramifications.
Watch us get fucking Pleasure Dome now.
Hey, that would make me... Oh, I mean, oh no, that would be such a shame.
All right. Should we go over to the wheel?
We should go over to the wheel. We should prime this thing. How many lurkers we got?
Well, last time I checked, we got 4 people watching. And we got 2 of us here, so that's 6. So I'm going to shuffle this thing 6 times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. What do
I
you
won't
say?
Make you do it 40 times for the 40th anniversary.
Yes, thank you. We'll thank you. All right, you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Let's
do
it.
Here we go.
Come on, baby. Oh, no, it's not going to be. I tell you, it's hard to be mad at it, though. We're going to Van Halen 2, a little track called Dance the Night Away.
Well, yes, apparently, I think I pissed her off too much, but maybe it wasn't enough to really fuck us with something. So instead, we've got something pretty incredible. Dance the Night Away from Van Halen 2. Well, I mean, I don't even know what to say beforehand, before we get into it, because we've talked a lot about, you and I specifically have talked about our feelings on Van Halen 2.
Yeah.
So it's almost like... It's almost like I don't want to show my hand, but at the same time, you already know my hand.
You know what? I've been watching a lot of Friends, and the quote that came to my mind was Joey Tribbiani saying, it's like a cow's opinion. It's moo. It's a moo point.
A moo point.
Yeah, a moo point before the song. Scott Monroe's happy. He said, a satisfactory result. I would agree with that. If we're going to spin anything other than House of Pain, you know, let's be it from my favorite Van Halen album of all time.
Yeah. Look, Corey's stuck in a snowstorm up there in the Great White North. So, you know, we need to give him a powerful, party-filled Van Halen tune in order to, you know, pick up the spirits and dance that snow away.
All right. So let's do it. This is all the way back to 1979. This is Dance the Night Away.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
How do you feel about a cowbell intro?
Love a cowbell intro. Anytime there's cowbell, I'm a happy guy. No issues at all with the cowbell. How about you?
You know, sometimes you can overdo it, and it can come across as extremely obnoxious. For whatever reason, it doesn't come off that way when Alex Van Halen does it. And maybe it's just because the sound of it just fits how this song is structured and just how we know the song is going to go. And if there was ever a perfect time for a cowbell utilization, I think it's for this.
And you know, it was subtle. It wasn't in your face.
Yeah.
It wasn't in your face, cowbell. It was nice and subtle. Do you know which song inspired this one?
Ooh. I don't.
Fleetwood Mac. Go Your Own Way. And I got that little tidbit from the Van Halen Encyclopedia. That's how I know it's right. CJ Chalvers, he never gets his stuff wrong. But yeah, apparently this is the first song they ever just kind of wrote and recorded in the studio. They just got to put all together in the studio. And it was inspired by Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac.
Interesting. Okay. So now I'm going to be, I know how this song goes pretty well. So I'm sort of listening in my head and kind of looking for the references maybe, or like where the inspiration might've come from and with Go Your Own Way. Maybe it's in the chorus with the harmonies. I don't know. That's a cool piece of information though.
Melody, tempo, definitely has a Go Your Own Way vibe. I did find little quote here on the lyrics. The song was inspired by a drunk woman who had sex with her boyfriend in the back parking lot of Walter Mitty's in full view of the band, then danced for hours in the front row of the club with her jeans put on backwards. Which is about as Van Halen a story as you can get.
Yeah, like, why wouldn't you write a song about that? Like, I want to write a song about that. I'd have to, like, reword it, obviously, but, like, that's amazing. Yeah. That's exactly the kind of story that would want you would write a song about. That's amazing.
All right, let's keep going. So you kind of get a little Dave influence, I think, on the chorus. It's very pop sounding, right? But those harmonies are just, they're so great. Like, I love a really good pop tune, too. And you want to give me a poppier chorus? I'm not mad at it. That was fantastic. I love that chorus so much.
No, and right away, they do the thing Van Halen loves to do, and they do really well when they want to do it. And it's a very simple chorus. It's just the title. Just singing the title of the track. And it's like, Van Halen has so many of those, and they're great because it's got the right hook, like the melody's in place. You have the perfect combination of just the structure of the song, Dave doing his thing, and then of course what really sells it is clearly the harmonies.
Yeah.
And if I'm alone in thinking that way for this song in particular, I'll die on that hill alone.
I tell you, Scott Everett in the chat, I think, put it pretty well. A rocker you can dance to. This is what makes Van Halen unique. This is why they aren't heavy metal. This is why Van Halen stands alone, because they can ride that line between heavier hard rock / heavy metal to your more poppier stuff. It's very much a poppy riff. It's very much a poppy chorus. The way they harmonize is kind of pop orientated, but it's still very much Van Halen.
And this was Van Halen 2. This was their sophomore album. So they've been doing this for years, you guys. It didn't change when Sammy joined the band. They've always done this. Ugh. Also, something to point out, just as I'm listening, this might be, if I really think about it, this might be one of my favorite songs of Dave actually singing. Like, he's utilizing his actual singing voice. He's not doing his little scat stuff. He's not like speak singing, that little thing he likes to do a lot where he's not really singing. He's just kind of speaking in in melody, speaking in pitch, things like that. All stuff he does very well, in the height of his, in his prime. But this one is where like he's straight up singing. Yep. You know, and he's throwing a little bit of his little Rothisms in there, of course, like you get those little howls and little screeches and things like that. And of course, he has a very unique cadence and timbre in his voice that like you absolutely know it's David Lee Roth when he's singing. And so that's all over the place, sure. But I don't know. I really love this song for a lot for Dave's performance of it because of him actually singing and utilizing his singing voice, and he can do it.
Really can. And I'm listening to this. I'm looking up some trivia here. Dance the Night Away actually featured in five different movies in one trailer. The trailer for the movie Mission to Mars in 2000, but it featured in the films Private Parts, the Howard Stern film from 97. Mission to Mars, it was in the film Grown Ups in 2010. It was just in the trailer. That's My Boy and Adam Sandler, Piece of Shit, in 2012. And then Argo, the Academy Award winner for Best Picture, Argo. And Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues in 2013. So a popular film God. In the late 90s, early 2000s.
It was, yeah. That's I wonder why that is. I guess just because the song just lends itself out to any opportunity. But that's hilarious when you put it in perspective like that.
Well, Howard Stern, for the most part, is a period piece. His early radio career.
Yeah.
Argo and Anchorman are set in different times. Like Anchorman was set in the 80s.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's right. Anchorman. I completely forgot that Anchorman is, both movies are a period piece. It's like you don't think about that until you're actually watching it. But like, oh yeah, no. These took place in the late 70s and early 80s. So like, okay, fair enough. It is.
I just think it's cool that Hollywood thinks, okay, we're set our movie in the late 70s, early 80s. We need a Van Halen song. What's the Van Halen song they pick? Well, the five of them picked Dance the Night Away, which is kind of cool.
Of all the ones they could have picked from that time frame, but I mean, this was released in 79, so I mean, they do have, if they want to keep it authentic to the period they're representing, they have a limited choice of catalog. However, their choices are, you take a song from either Van Halen 1 or 2.
Yeah,
there you go. And like, oh really? Geez. Tough call.
Scott Monroe says, "No Woe has always struck me as an inspired notation choice by Dave Lee Roth." Kevin Brown, who's a dick, says, "Just ducking my head to see what song you spun." And he says, "Well, if these two hosers would get on with it instead of vamping, I'd find out." Well, motherfucker, let's see if you can pick it up from this. Now, we don't get a typical Eddie Van Halen guitar solo. We just get like a nice little poppy musical interlude and then a nice little breakdown section before we're going to get a build, a mighty powerful Alex fill, and then back into the chorus. But what did you think not getting, say, a proper Eddie Van Halen guitar solo there?
Hot take. Didn't need it. I think if he had done that, I don't think the song would have worked. Like, I think the entire song would have been kind of like, like people might have been okay on it, but then I really think it wouldn't have come across as well as it did. And I'm sure there's plenty of people that don't like this song because it's a little too poppy, but it didn't need it. It did not need a rip-roaring Eddie Van Halen solo. Nope, just keeping it very subtle, keeping it very kind of loosey-goosey and fun and poppy, and it is what it is. And that's not, we have to remember, the term pop in music, especially when you're talking about a rock band, wasn't a bad thing. Like, that's not a dirty word. That's just how it was, because pop literally stands for popular. So what it has become, we can have a conversation about that later, a rant, if you will. But back then, if it was pop, that could have mean it likely meant it was a rock and roll song that was just very, very popular. So I don't think if you put shreddy Van Halen solo in this, it would come across very well. Do you agree?
100%. 100%. Eddie Van Halen always played to the song. And like you said, this is a song that doesn't really require guitar pyrotechnics to get its point across or to show his mastery, right? It's all about melody. It's all about harmony. It's all about just feeling good. And this song doesn't require that level of technique. What it requires is what we're going to get, and that's this big-ass soaring chorus that I'm going to play for you right now.
A famous fade out. They don't do the concert ending. They just fade away because they're dancing the night away.
That's right.
And it's like, it doesn't have to necessarily end, but it's dancing away because eventually the sun's coming up. And I also just want to point out that I love that Kevin Brown called me a hoser as well, even though I'm not.
You're an honorary hoser. You're an honorary hoser.
Not
That's
really.
Cool.
Although we did find out that. My last name does come for it's a French Canadian as opposed to off the boat from France. So I thought that was a neat find. And one of these days I'm going to come and find my great white northern relatives. Hopefully they're not a bunch of degens from up country, but we'll find out.
All right. Well, I guess it's that time to vote. I'm going to throw it to you first. You usually throw it to me or to the guests first. So I'm going to make you vote first here tonight. So the question becomes, Dance the Night Away from Van Halen 2, is this what dreams are made of, or is the dream tragically over?
Not even going to leave you in suspense and like keep you wondering, because it's Dance the Night Away. When you ask me what are some quintessential Van Halen songs, I've mentioned a few along the way that I consider. And I honestly consider Dance the Night Away one of those songs. Matter of fact, of the top 10, it's definitely in there in the top 10 somewhere. It's fun. It's just a fun rock song. It's a fun, you can call it pop if you want. Yeah, pop and rock, it's the same thing. It's just fun. It's very, it's nothing too overtly technical. They're not going out of their way to melt your face or give you a long-lasting impact think piece of a song. You know what I mean? Like they're not playing this song to make you think. No, this is them doing what they do best, especially in those early days. Dave's telling you a fun little story, and you know, singing to it and actually singing. I think that's really one of the selling points of this song. Overall, I think the structure is very brilliantly put together. But Dave, as I mentioned before, just actually singing, he's not doing too much of his shtick. He's just singing a rock song with his rock band. And he is, he's showing us that he's capable of being like a good vocalist when he wants to be. I mean, and this song is also kind of tailored to his vocal sensibility. Again, that's not a negative. That's a huge positive, because that means, at least it tells me, that the guys were all feeling it. The vibe was correct. It was on that day when they came up with it. And then the ultimate seller is the chorus and the big harmonies. I mean, that you really can't go wrong with that. Whenever you need a good shining example of what Van Halen can do musically and dynamically, I think Dance the Night Away is a really good example. You can have all the Unchained you want. You can have the Ain't Talking About Loves. You can have the Humans Being and like 5150 and the ones that just really just rip. And then you can have Dance the Night Away, where you're literally just having a good time. They're not going out of their way to be overtly hard rock. They're just like, nope, just a simple rock tune, and see what we're capable of. We can be nice and friendly. Maybe they did it for radio play. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they just did it just to see that they could do it. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Ultimately, what matters is Dance the Night Away is a very fun, very cool, and in my opinion, quintessential Van Halen tune. And obviously, that is why it is what dreams are made of. Corey Morissette, I can't imagine you have too far of a hot take, or I can't imagine you have a hot take on this whatsoever, but you might. So I throw it to you. For you, is Dance the Night Away what dreams are made of, or is the dream over?
Fuck!
Perfect little piece of pop rock. Just unbelievable. I love Dance the Night Away. Van Halen 2 is my favorite record from this group. From You're No Good all the way down to Beautiful Girls. I love every track on this thing, including Dance the Night Away. Great second track. Dave sounds great. The harmonies, of course, are top-notch. The band is on fire. There's really not much more to say. This is quintessential Van Halen for me. It's definitely in my top 10. Some days it's in my top 5. I love the way how Eddie backed off on the solo. I think that was just brilliant. And I just love everything about it. I never, ever skip it. I'll play it every single time it comes on. Let's go into the chat here for a few comments. Scott Everett, Ed going easy on the solo again, matching the song perfectly, which we talked about and agree totally. Tom loves the way it pans across, especially in headphones. Yeah, listen to it in headphones sometimes. Really, really cool. Scott Monroe says, sounds like a carefully planned out solo too, like he agonized over every note. And I agree. I think he... Yeah. You can kind of tell, okay, I want to put a little thing here, a little thing here, a little bend here, and just made it sound absolutely wonderful. Scott Everett, as slimmed down as it was still awesome watching him tap away and creating magic in that video. Absolutely. Dancing off into the sunset, says Scott Monroe. He also says, hot take, this could challenge little guitars for the highest percentage of what dreams are made of. Scott Everett doesn't agree. I got to go with... Scott the second, Scott Everett on this one. I don't think so either. When I think about this song and I think about the scores, I'm thinking, you know what we're looking at? Probably 87, 88, which would put this song second on Van Halen 2. Be fourth. We got a ton of good stuff.
You don't think this one could break 90?
I don't think it can break 90. No, if you're looking at Van Halen 2, and I think I can actually bring it up here. You're No Good's 84%. Bottoms Up is 94.4%. Out of Love Again was only 80. Light Up the Sky, also 94.4%. DOA, 96.2%. That's the leader on this record. And then Woman in Love, 93%. And Beautiful Girls, only 85%. So this is a very high-ranking album. Currently at 89% What Dreams Are Made Of. When you look at the album rankings, Van Halen 2 is third behind Van Halen and 1984, currently leading the way. I wanted to point out, too, 5150 jumped up a few spots after the Good Enough vote. Its final score right now is sitting at 76.1%. That now puts it ahead of Four Unlawful, Balance, OU812, Van Halen 3, and the terrible Best of Both Worlds compilation tracks.
I'm here to tell you guys that you're dreaming if you think a different kind of truth is better than 5150. I'm just gonna throw that out there. And like you're dreaming. I mean, it's fine if you have a personal connection with that album over 5150, but come the hell on, man. Whatever. It's fine.
We do have one track left on 5150 that could help raise that score. And we got a couple left on A Different Kind of Truth. I know Bullet Head is one, and The Trouble with Never is the other. So there's a couple that might bring it down.
It could, but do you feel hopeful in that assessment?
I like a different kind of truth. Do I like it more than 5150? No, but
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like it's. I'm not like dissing it as a terrible album. I'm just saying I think 5150 is the clear winner of those two.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
it just it stands to reason that like 5150, I think should be. I think it should be miles ahead, but I mean, even if it's just like one ahead, I feel like it deserves to at least be above A Different Kind of Truth. But again, you know, I can only vote from the way I feel, and everyone votes the way they feel, and that's fine. But you guys you're killing me out there. You're killing me, I tell you so. But nevertheless, aha,
Oh, that music can only mean one thing, Mark Meyer. It's time to play. How many times did Van Halen perform Dance the Night Away?
I think I got this one.
You think you got it? Okay. Now, I trust that you're not studying on your own time to get these numbers more correct. So,
look, not only have I not been listening to Van Halen in my off time because of the show, I made a specific choice to do that, unless it's a song we've already covered.
Okay.
But also, since you've started this lovely game, now I absolutely, like, I don't Google, like, anything Van Halen at all unless it's lyrics while we're talking about the song.
Perfect.
So I have not. I have not been cheating. I have not been looking up anything ahead of time. And all even right. if I did, I don't think I could retain all that information all at once. So
it's a lot of numbers. I'll grant you that. But now you got to come up with a number. Yeah. Remember, this is Price is Right rules. You have to come closest to the actual number without going over. And if you guessed so out of whack, but you're still under, I'm still going to give you the loser tone because Scott Haskin did that on an Aerosmith show not that long ago. The correct answer was like 1,000. He said 12. Like, no, you're so far out of whack. I'm giving you the loser tone. But here it comes. What's your guess? How many times do you think Van Halen performed Dance the Night Away?
A logical man would say 1,000 times.
All right.
However, I have to use my brain a little bit here because, like, that just seems unlikely.
That's you are
a lot.
Far from
1,000
logical.
Times is a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I'm far from logical, so I might be shooting myself in the foot here, but I think they've probably, because I gotta assume ever since they released the track, they probably played it on almost every show because it was a hit. It was a big hit. So I'm gonna say they played this thing 300 times.
300?
Yeah.
All right. I'm just going to go into the chat here. Scott Everett guesses, I think they played it on 8 tours, going with my method of multiplying it by 75 plays. I'm going with 600. And you went with, what was your number again, Mark?
I went 300.
300. Well, I guess technically. Bam! You know, I'm going to give it to Scott Everett, though. Scott Everett wins both showcases. The correct answer is 605 times.
Damn. That tracks.
Yep. First played March 25th, 1979 at the Celland Arena in Fresno, California. Last played October 4th, 2015 at the Hollywood Bowl, Los Angeles, California.
Amazing.
Yep.
But that's still, 605 is a lot. That's a lot of times to be playing that song. So I always get this feeling like, because I play music around, but I'm not nearly touring my dick off like most of these, you know, full-time bands do, especially with a big hit that they have to play every show. Yeah, I get this like weird anxiety feeling of just, do I really want to be a full-time musician and have like a hit song? Because that means that I have to play that song all the time. What if I get sick of it? What if I actually hate it? Like, what if I hated recording it and then it became a hit and now I have to constantly sing it? Like, and I guarantee you plenty of bands go through that. I know for a fact, the guy from Warrant despises Cherry Pie. He hates that song.
Well, Jenny Lane did too.
It.
Yeah. Well, Jenny Lane before he died said that, but I think even the new guy with Warrant is probably pretty sick of Cherry Pie.
Sick of that. I mean, the guy, Quiet Riot, they didn't write Come On Feel the Noise,
right,
but they covered it and it became a huge hit for them, and it was like, well, great, we gotta play this damn song. They did it on a dare too. They recorded that thing in like one take on a dare just to see if they could do it. They didn't realize it was going to be like the one song they're known for.
That's the power of Slade. And then the next album they did another Slade cover, Mama We're All Crazy Now. So
yeah,
don't underestimate the power of Slade, my friend. They're a pretty good band.
Power of Slade. Yeah, I like that. Ooh, maybe that'll be a new band name, like The Power of Slade.
Slade Tribute Band? I'm in. Can I play like triangle or something? Fuck, I can't play a real instrument, but I can, like, you know,
you'll
play the spoons.
You'll play the cowbell and you'll like it.
Oh, I can do it. I can do it.
That's amazing. So there you go, guys. Mark loses that game once again, but we all win because we spun a really awesome, great, very popular Van Halen track with Dance the Night Away. I will hear no slander about this song whatsoever. You hear that? So, you know, this week, when you're throwing in your tweets, when you're voting in on the song, and you're on the Discord, looking at all you lurkers out there, don't you be slandering Dance the Night Away. And if you are going to slander it, at least give me a good reason as to why. That's all I ask. So,
well, we have an early What Dreams Are Made Of in the chat. Chaz Charles just showed up. What did we spin? So they told him Dance the Night Away. He goes, fact. What Dreams Are Made Of. Most inspired, brilliant use of arpeggios ever. Love playing this live. That would be a fun one to play live. That's a good call.
Unless you're Van Halen and you played it like 605 times plus, then it's probably less fun. But yeah.
Josh in the chat says, Toto passed on Danger Zone in case it became a huge hit. Like, that's interesting.
Ooh, that is interesting. Wow.
Toto during Danger Zone? And then Scott Askin says, Steve Morris said it best. Imagine you could press a button and make 20,000 people scream. Wouldn't you want to push it?
Yeah, I would. Damn. Now oh my God, that's going to cause my brain to spiral. I'm like, what the fuck would Danger Zone sound like by Toto?
Right?
Oh, I want to hear it. And I love Danger Zone from Kenny Loggins. And look, Kenny doesn't hate that song as many times as he's performed it. You want to know why? You know how much money he makes from Danger Zone?
To this
day. A lot.
Yeah, Top Gun Maverick becomes a $1 billion movie, and he's rich all over again.
You heard like maybe a good 8 seconds of it in the new Top Gun movie. Maybe 8 seconds, but that 8 seconds wrote him such a fat check. Not to mention he probably has like some back-end deal with his songs played in films. So Top Gun Maverick was a $1 billion box office hit smash.
Yep.
So all those times it played, Kenny got paid. So you know, sometimes it's okay to write a song that is gonna be a hit that you might get sick of, because you just market it out to the film industry and they're just gonna play it ad nauseum and you just get a check every time.
I know.
So, royalties, bitch.
Steve Lukather has a new version of Toto that's hitting the road. I think they're opening for Journey, but they're actually playing Regina, Saskatchewan on a solo headlining date coming up soon. I'm tempted to go and just yell, play Danger Zone, you hacks. See if I can get under his skin.
You have to say it just like that. Yeah. And if they don't hear you, you need to have like a backup poster.
Oh, I'll make a sign.
Like you're at a wrestling match.
Absolutely.
Like play Danger Zone, you hacks.
I'm on Monday Night Raw in 1998. I'm holding up a sign that no one can see through. Yeah, absolutely.
Play Danger Zone, you hacks. Yeah. And I just have this vision of them looking out there like, what the fuck is
what?
Danger Zone? Wait, how does he know about that? Yeah.
No, we do Africa, not Danger Zone. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I feel sorry.
Instead, they'll start playing you like, well, we won't do Danger Zone, but how about this?
Yeah.
And they just launch into the entire Dune soundtrack.
I'd be down for that, actually. And now I feel bad for poor Tom Armbruster's wife, because he's singing Slade lyrics in the chat right now. See Chameleon lying there in the sun. That's from the hit song Run, Run Away, one of my favorite Slade tracks of all time.
Run Away is aptly named.
Love
there
it.
You go.
Love that, too.
When it comes to that one. So.
It's got a fiddle in it, for fuck's sakes. Come on.
The power of Slade. Never That's underestimate right. it. And never underestimate the power of Van Halen, whether it's rip-roaring hard rock or if it's a little bit more on the pop sensibility side of it all. It's all good. It's all Van Halen, and we all love it. And that is because we are just humble fans. We're not rock historians. We're certainly not experts on the band. Hence, how many times do I say, I wonder if they thought this? I wonder if they did this? You know why I say that? Because I don't know. Because I'm just guessing. Because I'm not an expert. We have people that are experts that would probably answer some of those questions that I have. But they're not on the show right now. It's just Corey and I, and we're just fans. So just let it always be said. You know, the show is still going, so I have to say it every show. I have to mention it for all of you out there.
I do have a piece of news about Van Halen experts, Mark, that I'm going to drop here tonight for you. I haven't even talked to you about this yet, but I've been talking with one, Kevin Brown, a good friend of ours, and he does trivia nights quite a bit. And he actually, over the Christmas break, before New Year's, did a Queen trivia night for all their listeners, and they had a lot of fun. And he offered to do something similar for our Van Halen Motley Crue. So I thought, wouldn't this be interesting? What if we did a live show with a Kevin Brown Van Halen trivia contest, and for the winner, Mark and I would chip in and send them a certified Van Halen expert t-shirt that you can find on our T Public store, designed by Kevin Brown. I thought that would be a lot of fun. Let's get all of our experts like Chaz and Jeff and the Scots personified. There's three of them. Jeff, like all those fine folks, all of our patrons that want to come on a call, let's have Kevin Brown monitor officiate a trivia contest, Van Halen trivia. And you and I can participate if you want, Mark. I'm sure we would do quite poorly compared to the most of our patrons. But for the winning patron, let's send him a T-shirt. 100% certified Van Halen expert. Huh? What do you think?
I'm absolutely overjoyed with that. I think that's a very fantastic idea. And then there's going to be a boss round. And the boss round is we sneak in an Eric Sinich to see if – and if you can beat him, then maybe you get two T-shirts. I don't know. would be fun to try and stump Eric.
It would be. Chaz is already in. Scott Haskins says, can I win most likely to not get a single question right but really tried? What can we send Scott if he gets every single one wrong?
My award. That's my award.
I thought we could send him like a little sticker or something. TeePublic makes stickers. We could send him a little.
We'll send you a sticker with our logo and it said, you tried.
Yeah. Mark shrugging.
Yeah, it's just me over here. So, and speaking of Kevin Brown, Kevin, if you're listening or when you listen to this, if you want to see a live video of myself in karaoke performing a very very popular Queen song, I'm going to need you to constantly hound my fiance because she has it. I don't have it. And she won't send it to me, but she'll send it to you if you ask her. So
you finally did go after Attack. Christy. Good.
What's that?
You finally did Dragon Attack in karaoke?
Well, that's a spoiler. I won't spoil which one I did.
Was it Give Me the Prize from A Kind of Magic?
I will say it is from A Kind of Magic. Oh, is not that one, though.
It's got to be Who Wants to Live Forever, then. I got to get this video. Christy, if you're listening, I need this video of Mark absolutely crushing Who Wants to Live Forever. Scott Monroe had the best idea. Scott Haskin will get a Notable Nudist T-shirt for trying. So that's a good. And we do have a Notable Nudist design. It's not in the store, though, because we didn't think who the hell would buy that. But we could probably get one made up just for Scott. Scott Haskin, the Notable Nudist. Notable Nudist,
take my
money. Josh wants one. There you go.
Oh, well, all right. Well, now we have to put it in the store. But hey, depending on how well or poor you do in this trivia game, we'll send you one of those shirts. So,
that's right.
Yeah, I think we can make that happen. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Yeah.
It's got to be a live show. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe end of January. Let's see if we can get Kev on board and come up with a cool trivia night. I know he does this all the time. I wasn't able to partake in his Queen one. But he's actually, I think every Thursday he does trivia nights. He's actually doing one tomorrow night. That's why he's not here tonight, because he's writing questions for a trivia night. So I know he enjoys it. I can't wait to see what he comes up with. Unlike Chaz, who we asked for the season one wrap-up of the Ultimate Catalog Clash, we asked him to come up with some Genesis trivia questions, and 90% of them are wrong. I'm sure in this case the questions will actually be correct, but... I tell you, we got some good experts in our chat. Greg Zito, the Scots, Jeff even said, even if I get one wrong, I will argue that I'm right, and he'll probably just beat us down like my children do. Like I just get so beat down.
That's
I say
the
fine.
American way.
Yeah, it's like fine. You want to go play with matches? Fucking go ahead. I don't care anymore. Like just stop. So
we'll ponder that and tinker around. It might not be a end of January. January is kind of a busy month, but we'll figure something out, because I think that would be a really, really fun time. I think Kevin would have a lot of fun doing that, and I think you guys would have fun. So let us know, tweet at us or message us on Facebook, or if you're on the Patreon, then you're right there in the Discord. You got a direct link to,
automatic
to
invite.
All of us.
Yeah, if you're a patron, you're automatically invited. Anybody else, maybe kind of, either email us or message Mark on the Twitter or the Facebook machine and make your case why you think you could do well at Van Halen Trivia and win one of these coveted, gorgeous T-shirts.
Yes, and if you want a sneak peek at what those shirts will look like or what you're in for,
I'll bring it up. Here we go. There it is right there. 100% certified Van Halen expert. I'll even let you pick the color, motherfucker. Look at that. We got heather, we got black, we got beige, we got fucking all sorts of things. Male fit, female fit, from small all the way to 5XL or Corey size, as I like to call it. We will send you a shirt if you win Van Halen Trivia.
Absolutely. It's all good stuff. And hey, while you're over there and you're swing on over to our website, podcastwithrock.com, you can find all the backlog episodes that we've done. It's a newly new site, newly formatted site, a lot easier to handle. I'm already a big fan. Okay. So yeah, get over there, check that out, check out what's going on. And like I said, join the Patreon, join all of us having fun, having good conversations. Sometimes it's, most of the time it's about Van Halen, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes we're just kicking it about other bands and other music that we like. And you can join in the conversation with like-minded individuals as follows: Matt Lacoste, Nate from the Deep Purple Podcast, Rava Flave, Josh Caldwell, Greg Zito, Michael Griffith, Chaz Charles, Sean McGinnity, the aforementioned Kevin Brown, Per Lineker, Scott Monroe, Ryan Powell, Jeff Brewer, Tom Armbruster, Scott Everett, Heath McCoy, Janice Risco, Brad Gould, Michael Triplett, Davey Lee Smith, and Chad Pollock. So thank you all so much for being a part of this this journey, being a part of the Patreon, helping us keep the lights on, and, you know, being able to engage in awesome conversations that we love so much. So thank you so much for doing that. Keep it on up. By the way, we're still on Facebook, still on Twitter /X, whatever the hell it's called. We have an Instagram, but we don't really use it, so don't bother.
Don't go there.
yeah, it's all good. So, and then, you know, if we, for whatever reason, are just not meeting all of your rock podcasting needs, because Van Halen's a lot, you know, and sometimes that's enough for people. But some of you out there are just hungry for just more and more content, more like-minded individuals like ourselves that talk about music that you love. And that's why we're part of the Deep Dive Podcasting Network, full of rock podcasts. Corey, can you let them know what kind of stuff they can expect at the Deep Dive Podcasting Network?
I sure can. Let's check out the list here. And I got a couple of updates, actually, on the first couple here. The CMPU is shrinking. First of all, Backtrack's theme music, uh-oh, we've been on hiatus for quite a bit. It's not happening anymore. That show has gone away, but you can go check out all of our old episodes wherever you get your podcast from. Also, Backtrack's Aerosmith Revisited is ending next week. Our series finale is happening next week. We kind of explain why in the show. But we're going to finalize our Aerosmith mixtape next week on that show, so check that out. Then, of course, we have myself and Kevin Brown at the Ultimate Catalog Clash breaking down 1990s Metallica. Metallica, the Black Album Side C, just dropped this week. Side D coming up next week. And then we get into Load and Reload right after that. That's a hell of a lot of fun. Then Kevin Brown, of course, has the Tom Petty Project and Seaside Pod Review with his good buddy Randy Woods. Very talented musician in his own right. Go check out his band, the Randy Woods Band, if you get a chance. Then we have Scott Haskin at Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast. Scott Haskin also does the Haskin Cast, which I was a guest on just this past week, and we reviewed the Jon Bon Jovi album, Blaze of Glory, from the Young Guns 2, inspired by the film Young Guns 2. So you can check out part one of that show right now, wherever you get your podcast from. Then we have our good friends Nate and John at the Deep Purple Podcast, The Simple Man at Skinnerd Reconsidered, Terry T-Bone Mathley at T-Bone's Prime Cuts, Rye at Sabbath Bloody Podcast, Paul, Joe, and David at In the Lap the Pods. That show is wrapped up, too. You can catch up on all the old episodes wherever you get your podcast from. Andy and Matt at Hawk Binge, Eric and Jonathan at Maiden A to Z, Daniel and Josh at Diary of the Badman, the Ultimate Aussie Podcast, Ben and Sam at Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast, George and Hattie at the Judas Priest Cast, Clay and Rye at North by South Podcast. That is a Canadian music versus American music show. That's a heck of a lot of fun. Then we have Greg and Jonathan at So Far, So Pod, So What, talking all things Megadeth. Quinn at In Volume for All. Sav, Nick, Steve, and Mark at the Rock Roulette Podcast. And then we have the Chaz Podcasting Universe here. And actually, Chaz and his group of co-hosts are going to be right here on the show next week. Chaz and Greg at Regarding Lulu, Chaz and Shats at Rush Rash, and Chaz and Wolfie at Regarding Roger. That's Regarding Roger Waters, specifically, not Roger Moore, not Roger Whitaker. I've been corrected many, many times. Then, of course, you can catch all of our other friends that are outside the Deep Dive Podcasting Network, including the DLR Cast, the Bogus Otis Show, the Sean Geek and Fast Fred Podcast, You're All Doomed, a Friday the 13th podcast, Booked on Rock with the legendary Eric Senich. Dissect that film. Three's Company 2, a rewatch podcast. And Pod of Thunder, the recognized symbol of excellence in rock and roll podcasting. This week, they had a good one. It was actually NXS, Suicide Blonde, from the X album. That's a killer fucking tune. That was a really, really good show. That dropped this past Monday. So go check out Pod of Thunder and a great, great NXS tune from 1990.
I'm just laughing now about a Regarding Roger podcast, but it's Roger Moore. That just sounds like... That sounds awful. That just sounds like the most boring show. Oh, but no offense to you, Roger Moore fans, but that just, unless you're talking about Bond, then I guess what else is there to talk about?
Outside of Bond and Cannonball Run, what else did he do?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I forgot about Cannonball Run. But I'll never forget the aptly Cannonball Run 2, the superior sequel.
How about the third one, the Canadian one? I think it was called Speed Zone or something. And like John Candy was in it.
Never saw it.
Eugene Levy was in it. Like, it was kind of a spiritual sequel to Cannonball Run, but it was made in Canada with an all-Canadian cast, and it was just weird. Terrible movie.
What's it called?
I think it's called Danger Zone or Speed Zone. Maybe it's Speed Zone.
Danger Zone. Speed Zone. All right, I'm going to look that up. You had me at Eugene Levy and John Candy, so like, it, even if the movie's terrible, it's probably great.
No, it's called Speed Zone, 1989.
Speed Zone.
Peter Boyle's in it, Donna Dixon, John Candy, Matt Frewer.
Oh, wow. Oh,
Joe Flaherty, Tim Matheson.
Yeah.
Sherry Belafonte.
In it. Holy shit. Yeah.
Dick Smothers. Tom Smothers. Dick Smothers. Or Tom Smothers just passed away here not that long ago.
Oh, he did. Yeah. Yeah. Fucking John Schneider's in this thing. Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah. Okay. I'm looking this movie up immediately. Like, I'm going to try and find it and watch it. Maybe it's on Tubi.
And Jamie Farr reprises his role as the Sheik. He's the only cast member from any of the other Cannonball Runs to partake, but it was written by Michael Short, who I believe is Martin Short's brother.
Okay, so if he's got even just a tiny bit of his brother's sensibilities in comedy, then there's probably some good comedic gems in this movie. Maybe overall the narrative is shit, but again, you had me at Levy and Candy, so there's no... In my mind, that's perfection. So,
you know, it might not actually be Eugene Levy. I know John Candy's in it, Matt Frewer, Tim Matheson. I actually don't see Eugene Levy on the cast list there, so I may have been wrong on that.
Oh,
one, but
you instead broke my of him, heart, but I still love.
We got a Duke boy, John Schneider's in it. There you go.
Yes, I know. I never watched Dukes of Hazzard. That was a little bit before my time. So, you know, but I know who John Schneider is, obviously.
Donna Dixon, of course, Mrs. Dan Aykroyd. She was in Spies Like Us, if you remember that one with Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase. Yeah, good movie. Peter Boyle, of course, from Young Frankenstein. Matt Frewer is Max Headroom, so the cast isn't too bad.
Dude, Matt Frewer, like Max Headroom, yeah, that's one of like a thousand like characters that this dude, like you've definitely seen him in anything. Name a thing, he's probably been in it.
You like Stephen King's The Stand? He was in that in the ABC miniseries in 1990.
Did you like Lawnmower Man 2? No one did, but no he's in that too.
Did you like Lawnmower Man 2? Oh my God.
It's pretty bad, even like, Lawnmower Man the movie is pretty awful.
It's pretty
too,
bad,
but,
yeah.
I mean, but although I will say, like, as bad as that movie is, if you've ever read the short story it's based on, I'm not sure which is worse, because clearly Stephen King wrote that during his like coke days, because like only a cokehead could come up with this bullshit.
Yeah. Like the Tommyknockers, where he doesn't even remember writing that book. He's like, fuck, I wrote a book about aliens. Really? The Tommyknockers? Never heard of it. But Chaz,
it's like, yeah, one of many times that you wrote about aliens. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Chaz is kind of shocked that you live in Nashville and haven't spent time at Cooter's Garage.
Do you want to know why?
Why not? Lay it on us.
Because I'm from Nashville. I am not a tourist.
Ah.
That is why.
He's an elitist.
Natives don't go to the tourist attractions. Some of them we do, just because like you got to experience, like you have to go in and experience Opryland Hotel. You just do.
Sun Records.
It's not there anymore.
Oh man.
No, it was a Tower Records. Actually, it was one of the biggest Tower Records I've ever seen. And man,
So you signed records where, like, signed records. You had Elvis, you had Carl Perkins, you had Jerry Lee Lewis, you had Johnny Cash for a spell. I always wanted to.
Sun Records. Oh, I'm sorry. That's in Memphis.
Oh, is it? Oh, I'm sorry. I get my Nashville's and my Memphis mixed up. Here's a quick topic change for you, Mark. I know you get sick of talking about Nashville or Memphis, but Jeff Brewer says best sequel, Aliens, maybe Lethal Weapon 2. I'm on board with Aliens, actually. I really love Aliens.
Yeah,
completely different movie from Alien, but Lethal Weapon 2 over Lethal Weapon, disgust.
I used to agree with the Aliens part, but then one day I decided to watch the Alien director's cut, and that still withstands the test of time to me.
Alien is a perfect horror movie. Aliens is a perfect action movie.
It's pretty damn good. Like, there are things about Aliens that I want to go. I mean, there's a lot you can go like, that doesn't hold up very well. However, when you know what it took to make it and just the achievement in cinema that movie was, you kind of have to give it props. So I'm not mad at it. That's all good.
I will, however, push
back on Lethal Weapon 2. Lethal Weapon 2 is fine, but it is nowhere near the caliber of the first one.
Greg Zito says Lethal Weapon 2 was the best one. You know, I'm kind of partial to the three. We had Jet Li in there. We had Mel Gibson being a horrific racist in that one, too. Oh, four.
That was four.
That was four.
Yeah.
What the hell happened in three? Joe Pesci was in it. Let's see. I know that much.
Yeah, Pesci came back, and then that's about it.
Yeah.
Oh, we got introduced to Renee Russo in that.
Right.
Great. She was a great addition. But that's about it. That's all I can tell you from Lethal Weapon 3.
Wasn't Lethal Weapon 2 the, I have diplomatic immunity, and then they shoot him in the head, and then it's just been revoked.
Yeah.
One of the worst lines ever.
That's a great line. It's cheesy as hell, but it's great. But the worst line in that is Mel Gibson saying, if you leave now, that'll be the end of it. I'll let you go. But if you stick around, I'm going to fuck your ass. And I think he means he's going to kill him, but it's just
the way he says
it. It's like, you don't know. And then later when, you know, after the girl he's seeing has her tragedy, he's like, I'm going to get these guys, Raj. I'm going to get them and I'm going to fuck them. Like, what is happening?
I remember
this movie.
He's really like, and I'm going to fuck, like, he's at him and he's going to fuck him. And
he's like, it's personal. It's personal now. I'm going to fuck him.
It's like, are you like, going to kill him or are you going to fuck him? Like, and with Mel Gibson, you never know, right? And oh my goodness.
That's what I thought was going to happen at the end. It was like diplomatic immunity. And Mel Gibson was just going to, pull
bend
out his
over.
Thing and just like, yeah, here we go. I told you what
was going
to happen.
I got your diplomatic immunity right here. It's written
it's
on my
diplomatic immunity. Yeah. That was terrible. I take back that joke. So anywho, but we can certainly debate more about what sequels are better than the predecessor over in the Discord. So hey, if you guys want to jump in on that conversation, join the Patreon, get in on the Discord. It's a fun time and we have great conversations in that chat. Sometimes I can't even keep up and I don't even try, but it's great. I read all of it. So on behalf of Corey and the Lurkers and everybody listening all around the world, we are And the Podcast Will Rock, and we will rock you later.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.